this meeting to order. Rob, can you please call roll?
Mr. Powell's
here.
Mr. McNulty?
Here.
Mr. Bells?
Yeah.
Mr. Pierce?
Here.
Mr. Beer?
Here.
Staff, Robin Duffy, present. Legal counsel is here, Ms. Jennifer Huber.
Here, present.
Jeff Beer, our senior zoning officer.
Okay, so for new business, or is anything, Robin, before we get started on this, or?
Sure.
Okay. For new business, I guess we can just jump back right into the RCOD amendments. All right. Robin, did you want to go through, or did you have anything for going through the staff comments from Gallup or Regional or anything that you wanted to cover first?
No, not in particular. I'm happy to go over the staff report about whatever you were in.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. The summary being Orange Township Board of Trustees passed a resolution on September 20, 2021. Which imposed a moratorium on the filing of all applications in Orange Township Route 23 Corridor Overlay District until January 1. That was extended to July 1, 2022 in order for staff and legal counsel to review the 23 Corridor Overlay District and highlight any modifications that we would like to make. So as part of that, maps were changed. I think I'll take you through some of the textual changes first, and then we can review some of the maps. The commission does have printed copies of the maps in front of you as well. I apologize that those were not sent out farther in advance, but we just got those together. One of the bigger changes is that we have deleted the multifamily residential section of the overlay district. So essentially all those standards have been incorporated into the mixed use sub area. So some of those standards have changed, but it's essentially a mix of the old standards in mixed use as well as some of the standards from multifamily residential. Section 20.04, we did have some procedural changes. One thing that I would highlight, and this changes in a few different subsections, is that the timing and the schedule of submittal and hearings has changed. So the Zoning Commission will now schedule an RCOD work session within 45 days of each monthly submittal deadline, rather than 14 days as it was previously. Skipping down to that same schedule has been applied to the 20.04G. So the trustees will also schedule a public hearing within 45 days after the work session of an application rather than 30 days. So previously the schedule was the application deadline, 14 days for a zoning commission work session, and then 30 days for the board of trustees to hear it. That schedule has now been changed to 45 days for a zoning commission work schedule, and then 45 days for the board of trustees to hear it following that work session. 20.04C has been changed to reflect that recommendations included in a traffic impact study, or TIS, shall also be approved by the township in addition to approval from the permitting authority of the applicable roads. So previously it was whichever permitting authority applying for whichever right-of-way, whether it was the state or the county, that permitting authority would just have unilateral jurisdiction over the traffic impact study, and that language has been updated to give the townships latitude in approving those traffic impact studies as well. 20.04H, condition of approval has been added. This subsection requires that no property in an application and development plan shall be included unless such property is located in a joint economic development district or JAND. So we did add the requirement that all applications for the RCOD overlay district must be included in either a current JAND or a new JAND. 20.04N, I 5.5, which deals with the amount of landscaping and screening features required to constitute a major amendment. We added that. And as part of our discussion this evening, staff would like to request feedback from the Zoning Commission as to what constitutes a major amendment and what staff can approve administratively as a minor amendment. And then, speaking of amendments, the timeline for Board of Trustees to hear a major amendment has also been extended to 45 days, just to keep everything uniform. So if there is an existing plan district that came in with an amendment, the trustees would have 45 days to hear that within from the application date. Section 20.05, prohibited uses, language was added, which prohibits fueling stations, auto-oriented uses, and standalone drive-through facilities. Section 20.06, commercial sub-areas. This was part of a definition update as well. It essentially just clarified the definition of transient hotels to refer to the Ohio Revised Code and limiting them to a daily rate rather than an hourly or other rate. Section 20.08, mixed use, 20.08G, maximum lot coverage requirements decreased to 60% from 75%. That is something that previously the mixed use was 75%, but the requirement in the multifamily section of the code was 60%, and so ultimately we chose to keep the 60% requirement instead of 75%. Section 20.09, general standards. A lot of this was smaller language, just in terms of cleaning up language, making it clearer. So in 20.09A, the language has been changed to refer to four-sided architecture when talking about buildings and architectural features rather than 365-degree architecture. In 20.09A, language has been added to permit roofs that have a pitched appearance and not just pitched roofs was the previous language. Additional restrictions were added for drive-throughs. 20.09B, we did change the standard for street trees. So going to every 25 feet, a street tree is required. Rather than every 30 feet, so decreasing the amount of space in between means more street trees. Coniferous trees or a combination of deciduous and coniferous trees are now permitted. I believe previously it was just deciduous trees. Language requiring landscaping within setback areas has been removed. We no longer require that. Language has been added 20.09E concerning multi-use paths and sidewalks. We would like to refer to the county engineer office on this issue and make sure that we have their support on that. As of now, those conversations have not happened, but we will do that shortly. Language was also added in 20.09G that permits one monument sign along US 23 if there is no access granted. So they would have some signage if they are not directly on. And language was added in 20.09J to add crosswalk fence as a permitted type of fence. And finally, in section 20.12, definitions, some of this we've covered already, but just kind of again clarifying and updating language. The definition of auto-oriented use has been updated. Language was changed in the way that we calculate lot widths. So on corner lots, the distance is now calculated between right-of-way for the lower classified road line and the side lot line. And previously, it had been measured from the right-of-way line for the higher classified road and the side lot line. So just switching the way we measure lot width for corner lots. Drive-in movie theaters were added in the definition of standalone drive-in facility. Definition was updated for three-family residential unit buildings. Language was changed, similar to the corner lot definition, just changing the definition in the sign area just to specify how that area is calculated. I believe the standards remain the same for that. And as I mentioned earlier, the definition of transient hotel was updated to refer to specific language in the Ohio Revised Code that discusses the definition of those transient hotels. Just to keep things simple, and since some of these are multi-page documents, we did have, you know, usually we include Delaware County Regional Planning Commission's recommendation in the staff report, where we had it as a separate document for tonight's meeting. I won't go over all their comments. The majority of their comments have already been addressed. They did recommend conditional approval of the amendments to the 23 Corridor Overlay District, the DCRPC, Orange Township Zoning Commission, and Orange Township Trustees, subject to their staff comments. And with your permission, I will go over the map briefly to show you the comparison of what was changed. So a lot of this was parcels that went from mixed use to the just the standard commercial office. So you can kind of see part of this in segment one, the mixed use to the north of that remains mixed use. I would note that some of those single family parcels on Shanahan Road were previously included in the overlay district. We have taken some of them out, except for one or two, which I believe will serve as access points for a proposed development that is in that mixed use area, but the rest of those single family parcels have been removed from the overlay district. And you can see a lot of the mixed use areas have become the standard commercial office, essentially north of Lewis Center Road all the way up to the mixed use area that borders on Shannon Road. Directly south of that, again, you can see a lot of area went from mixed use to the commercial office district. We did keep some of the mixed use areas in there, but largely the mixed use went to just the standard commercial office. And then finally, the southern portion, similar themes. It was these mixed use areas along US 23 on the east side do remain mixed use, but a fair amount of the parcels on the west side of US 23 have changed from mixed use to commercial office. The advanced manufacturing logistics, R&D, or industrial, whatever you want to call that area, that part remains the same.
Changes from the original, which we'll get into that here in a minute. Who wrote all this? Where did this come from?
That is an excellent question. I will say that I have been here for 1 month and all of those changes occurred before my time here. Ms. Huber, do you have any?
So the original document was prepared, the original text was prepared by a consultant that the township hired to help, and I think worked with DCFA as well mm-hmm. in some of that yep. generation. The changes that have happened since then have been legal counsel, staff, anything that's come up since the enactment of the first version that we sort of like put in the back of our minds and said, hey, we want another crack at this. So that's, we've been working on this.
All right, what happens to all those projects that were just recently approved that don't fit into this?
Yeah.
You know, just the one we just did the last time that has the gas station, BJ's. And, you know, the other multifamily on the west side, which is under construction, they're on Owen Field. You know, so there's lots of projects that have happened when this was shut down versus this document showing up today.
So my understanding, this is an overlay and that you can still apply under traditional zoning. Is that correct?
Yep.
Are those, are the examples you just gave, are they under the overlay? Are they under?
The one was approved under the overlay. That was Cheswick Village. That was while the overlay was in place originally.
Mm-hmm. The condo is there on
Owenfield. Yep, on Owenfield. And then the one that
BJ's.
The BJ's is not part of the overlay. That was part of the a regular rezoning process.
And then there was a Sheets.
The Sheets was part of the overlay.
Right. And now would not be. Now
correct.
Now would not qualify, but did at the time.
Correct.
Now we don't need to get into that. But the other thing I heard and saw here is it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but maybe it does if somebody explains it, is that I heard the part about trees every 30 feet or every 25 feet, but no landscaping is required.
There's landscaping standards in here. The previous version had street trees and landscape trees. So there were spots where they had to put 30 trees within 100 feet because of being on a corner lot. It changed. So it was like overkill on the number of trees next to the road.
And I think the other provision that I heard from Robin was there used to be a requirement that there be a certain level of landscaping in the setback.
Yes, yep. And that came up because there are some businesses, one of them I remember there at Hidden Ravines, you know, those businesses on the east, the commercial on the east side of 23, mm-hmm. had gotten away for a long time without putting any of the landscaping that mm-hmm. was required by zoning. Is that now out? They don't have to do that any longer?
No, this is just, the previous one had two different sets of street trees. So it had street trees and then landscape trees. So depending on how your building was set and your parking, the street trees and landscape trees would double the number of trees that you needed. So it was hard for the developers to fit that many trees in with our spacing requirements and the location of it and with the parking. So this is still requiring the trees, but then we also still have the other landscape standards that are, you know, if there's headlight buffering, they have to have a continuous hedge blocking the headlights along parking areas and still have the other landscape standards. This is just...
I got a question about the trees before we get off the trees. Yep. So is there something within here, if a utility comes in and trims back the trees, are the developer, are they going to be hit on that, or how are we going to police that? Or do we have a plan? So City of Columbus, for example, it's $200 an inch. So if you go in and you trim a tree that's within the Columbus right-of-way, it's part of their tree initiative, they charge you $200 an inch in utility. So do we have, because the developer is going to put up a tree, right? Utility's going to come in. You can't have a tree over 15 foot within a utility right-of-way. So they come in and they trim it, they take that tree out. So are we going to, go against the developer because that tree's not there? Do we have anything within our...
Oh, is there a requirement? I guess your question is there a requirement that they replace the tree?
Correct. How are we going to enforce that in a sense?
Currently, they are supposed to replace any dead trees or landscaping that occurs.
But my understanding also is we're not putting trees in the right-of-way.
Yeah, they're not in the right-of-way, but there could be utility easements through there.
There
but
could
that
be
would
utility
be...
easements in that. Most of your utility easements anymore are within the road right-of-way. You move them out.
Yeah, so yeah.
Because generally I'm under the impression you don't put anything in an easement either, because it could be, like you said, cut down, torn down, whatever purpose, but it needs to be on...
Plus trees grow into...
Right.
Well, I can't do anything about it just growing into it, but I'd like to think it's going to take a while before a tree actually grows into an easement or a right of way.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Fast growing trees in 3 years you'll have.
I have a question just about the consultant, making these recommendations of inquiry. Where did this come from? But I thought there was an expectation that we would meet them, right? And they would kind of talk with us about their process and their thought process and how things are. Maybe I missed it.
You're getting confused with the overall zoning code rewrite.
Okay.
So this,
so this is a different
This was done with a consultant previously, the first version
last year,
of it.
2 years ago.
And then once we got put on the moratorium, then it, we haven't worked with a consultant since then. It's just been zoning staff and legal counsel that has worked on it.
So okay, this is from the not the recent consulting group that you
correct.
Hired. But somebody, now, are they still part of the, they still
no.
being built? Okay, so then my next question would be, so it took a long time to bring this out. How long has it been? A couple of years to make the changes and then say, okay, this is what we think? Or I'm just trying to figure out, when did they put this together? If they're no longer with us, when did they put this together if they were hired a couple of years
ago? The original document was enacted 2 years ago, yeah, year and a half ago?
Yeah, probably a year and a half.
And that's when she was involved. And I think it sort of sat, properly. I mean, it was on the books, was enacted. And I think staff was marinating, legal was marinating. The trustees were thinking about the operation of how it was going to work. So it has not been worked on consistently that entire time. This is a more recent, this has been worked on in the last 4 to 6 months, maybe?
Yeah.
I'm assuming since the moratorium.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. Yeah, I just think it seems like there was I hadn't heard of it, I guess. Maybe because I wasn't on board at the time or what have you. Hadn't heard about it. It seems like there have been some thoughts about, or at least a few conversations in the interim with us about these are the things we're thinking about, right? Or that the consultants we need to think about. And I can, granted, you bring it to our attention now, but it just seems like
yeah.
Well, I think I heard at one point in time, whether it was true or not, I guess it was, I'm asking whether it is true, whether that the group that we hired, the 23 overlay, wasn't going to be a part of what they were going to work on.
No, they are not working on it. This is that
two
is separate.
Two separate
yeah.
things.
Right. So 23 overlay and whatever else they're going to do.
Yep.
I don't know. It seems to me the 23 overlay is a bigger part of Orange Township. And also the other thing, which gets to be tough to deal with, because you've got to deal with the present, not the future. But we've already heard many times if you're reading to the future, Delaware County would like to eliminate the traffic somehow that's coming down 23 mm-hmm. and take it somewhere else. Too many traffic lights, the truck traffic, all that's disturbed. I know that sits out there because that would have an effect on all this too, but we can't do that.
Right. To an extent, an overlay district is a planning tool, right?
Yes.
Is a development tool because that's the idea, right? You're trying to say, hey, if you're interested, choose this overlay. Here's because we're gonna, we've put it on the path, the spectrum of the steps a little bit further forward than other traditional planned and regular street districts. But we, the township, retains significant amounts of control, but also flexibility. And we've written out sort of what we're anticipating going in here to give those who are interested an idea. So to an extent, it is sort of a planning development tool because you can literally put on paper. The township can put on paper what its vision is for the area. But you're right, our planning development only goes so far, and none of us are, soothsayers. We can't say what some of the other jurisdictions are thinking.
I have a couple questions also. One of the changes was on traffic studies, right, that the versus being subject to, Delaware County or whoever else, the engineers and the structure. We sent it to the township. Would that require, do we have a traffic study expert on the
staff? Glad you asked
that. Require us to
the township's review would be in addition to the county's review. So this is section, I'm not going to say it quick, but the section right below it says that the township may utilize a third-party engineering firm or the county engineer's office to review and approve the recommendations of the TIS. So it's built in. The ability to rely on someone who's, I'm a lawyer, I'm not an accountant, I'm not an engineer, so it wouldn't be me. But we'd have the ability to find someone who is an expert and use that.
Developer is paying for a traffic study, and then the township with the county engineers reviewing that traffic study.
Right. Is that your understanding?
the township has the ability to hire a private consultant to, if we don't.
Yeah. Or the, I mean, the provision.
So who is the one, who is like the traffic engineer doing the traffic study then? I'm assuming that they're hired by.
Yeah, yes, they are hired by the developer.
They're not hired by the developer, and then the township is reviewing it, be it in-house, third-party consultant, county engineer.
Correct.
But they're not doing the traffic study. It is the developer that's doing the traffic study.
Yeah. My challenge is if the township has to hire somebody, I mean, of course, that's an expense, right? I mean, they are allegedly, well, can I get developers, assuming they hire a third party that's going to do the study themselves. I'm just wondering what's the thought here that says, other than we don't want them to make a decision by themselves, I guess, at the end of the day, the study is what the study is, right? So what's driving this thought that says, hey, we'd like to put thumbs up or thumbs down? I mean, is that part of what we do anyhow?
Yeah, so this kind of came about with the Sheets development. There was a lot of concern about the traffic pattern and the traffic study that was presented. So then it went out to legal counsel, to a third-party consultant, and they came back with different numbers and told us that the developer needed to use different numbers than what they originally used that with the study that they presented to the county and to the state. So that third-party consultant gave us a different recommendation than what the county.
Did the township pay for that?
Did we have a provision where it was a fee shift over to the applicant?
I don't think we'd.
Okay.
That was kind of.
To me, that would be the great weight.
Right.
Is to say, hey, if upon our review we just don't trust it, or we don't have confidence in it, or what have you, we'd like for us to be able to independently select a third party, or they, whatever, you can come to an agreement on who the third party is. They pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what the results of that says. And if they get married to one another, you give a thumbs up. If they differentiate,
right,
then something has to change or something has to go.
Right. And that's kind of what our thought process was to compare and kind of see. But yeah, I mean, that's a good point of making sure that they pay for it.
Yeah.
Or if we put it in there.
And then that way, it gives them a more sense of purpose. Now, my other thing here is that significant change here with respect to commercial office and that sort of thing. I mean, is there a big boom coming to town that says office and commercial spaces in demand, or what's the control of that?
So my understanding, and Jeff, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that there are certain caps on how many residential units can be in certain areas of the overlay district. And it just seemed, if all those mixed-use parcels developed as mixed-use, then it would be far away over that cap that is set in the text. So this would reflect that, there will be some residential within the overlay district, but it won't be quite as overwhelmingly residential as that initial map would suggest.
Yeah, where does that mean? Just wondering, what does that text say? What is that cap, or what is that percentage?
Yeah, so it's in the development text, and it's per segment.
Okay.
So segment one is actually capped out. There's no multifamily units that are allowed in that segment. Segment two, I believe there's maybe 20 multifamily units that are allowed, 25, something like that. It's not very many. So that's pretty much tapped out. I'm not 100% sure on segment three. There's more available on segment three. On section 20.031 shows the standard. So there's 400 units that were in segment area one, 425 in segment area two, and then 350 in segment area 20.0 or in segment area three.
So this, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought there was a pullback on the overlay story, right, from our perspective. Maybe I'm missing that. When the Sheets thing came along, right, I thought we...
There was a moratorium on the moratorium.
Yeah, okay.
So that moratorium is still under effect until.
Yes.
Until July.
Well, until July 1st on, yeah.
And so is there any thoughts of revising the caps number for the overlay?
Not from staff's end, but if commission thinks that's an idea, if they want to visit that, I'm not sure what the trustees will say when it gets to that level.
I actually like the fact that that's been cut back from where the original was. I think that was one of the main complaints about the original overlay. That's why some people, well, I said that was one of the main complaints about the overlay district.
Yeah.
Multi-uses that were predominantly multi-family housing.
Multi-family housing.
But without having a commercial or office use with the mixed use.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing, but that's been.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where all this.
And with some standards, with some numbers, because I've never heard those numbers before. I'm sure they always existed, but I never, maybe just didn't ask the right question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand where all the commercial activity is going to come from at the end of the day.
I mean, currently a lot of it's zoned commercial now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, when I'm looking at the old map compared to the new map.
Yeah.
You know, I might get a few stories personally. And if it's multifamily, it's multifamily. You don't say, I'd rather some children running around.
Yeah, and a lot of it was because of the numbers. I mean, like segment one, there's no more multifamily that can go in their units, and segment two, there's very little. So there's no need to have mixed use really in those sections.
Yeah. Is there a study on the maximum number of units that can go in these areas, assuming they're still mixed use? I mean, I understand the cap, but the cap is artificially placed there. What is the maximum number that could potentially go? Anything that tells us that, so we can say, well, we should increase it by 100 units or 200.
Was that on the original consultant? Did they put together a study like that?
No, this actually came at the trustee level.
Okay.
Was where they wanted the caps because it was open-ended originally.
Because a consultant probably has a better grasp of what those numbers are.
Right.
Well, and keep in mind that this is an overlay, right? So all of these properties could still seek any of your other zoning districts, any of which might be full residential, part residential, multifamily. I mean, those are still options.
Yeah. But they'll still be subject to the cap, right?
No.
No.
If they don't pull down the overlay and they use some other tool, then they're... Okay. Yep.
So they use the traditional logging route, which is under the process of... consulted in writing anyway. Sunday. Exactly. We might actually have a mixed use.
So. Sorry. No, good point. So the 45 days, those changes, and just my concern there is I know how developers think was it internal that just against that process and stuff, and that's understandable because if you get a lot of paperwork through and to get that over. So was that just we found internally we needed that 45 days instead of 30 days?
Yes, that's my understanding is just to make sure that staff has enough time to, you know, thoroughly go through the application, make sure that we are doing our due diligence, you know, as well as, you know, when you're trying to schedule meetings with five zoning commission members and three trustee, you know, board of trustee members, just that gives us a little more flexibility. And so, you know, I certainly understand that developers see time as money, and that is true. But this is still an expedited process that I believe would still be much more expedient than a traditional rezoning process, which can take 6 months or more.
And this, with the overlay district, there's no referendum period, so that also helps the developers. So, like, when it's another 30 days, so they don't have to go through referendum if they go through this.
No, that's good.
So that's another thing they like.
Yeah, I just wanted clarification on that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, when we get these packets in, they're 200 pages, and we have to have a tech review. We get the packet in on Monday. We have a tech review on Thursday or Friday that same week. We have to have corrections back. Yeah, we send it back to the applicant. Yeah. They correct it. Then they go to the zoning commission that Thursday. Then they have another couple days to get it done, to get the revisions, and then a week later they're at the trustee. So it was a 30-day turnaround from the start of the application to when the trustees heard it, and it was having four or five people reviewing these plans, and we're still missing some stuff. So
yeah,
this gives us a little more leeway.
When are the trustees going to vote on this? Is there an average that's set?
No, it'll be once you guys make a recommendation after.
So we're here to make some recommendations and see what happens.
So when you make a formal motion to approve it or whatever, then
follow
it goes
the usual
to
process. Yeah.
Okay. Then we'll take it to the trustees, and then they'll set up a hearing date, and then they'll start their discussion on it.
Well, I hope we can table this a little bit so that we can think about.
Yes, we did not prepare any preset motions for you to approve this this evening. We did not anticipate that would be the case. You know, we want this to go through a thorough process of vetting it, making sure that this commission's preferences are heard, and staff can discuss things and make some revisions as well based on your feedback.
One of our questions is: do you think we can get a guesstimation for this mixed-use story of additional units that are capped, so if you want to come up with a recommendation and say, hey, let's add 200 more units to that cap?
That is something we can look into, yes.
Yeah. So we can get information on that. That's great.
So I have a couple comments, if that's okay with the rest of the commission. One of the new requirements is that the affected land be placed in a JED, which is a Joint Economic Development District. Can you all talk about the benefits of a JED and why it should be in a JED, and what the township, what the developer, what the bonuses of having a JED is, since that's a new provision?
Yeah, so a JED, a Joint Economic Development District, is an economic development tool provided by the state of Ohio. It is particularly useful for townships. Because, as you're probably aware, townships in Ohio cannot collect income tax, whether it be from workers working in the property or residents who live in the property. A JED allows a township to partner with an incorporated area, a city or a village, to collect income tax from people either working or living in that district. And then the proceeds from that income tax are split between the municipality and the township. And so that requirement is something that allows the township to bring in additional tax revenue in part to offset services that these businesses require in order to survive, whether it be roads, whether it be infrastructure,
safety services.
Yeah, safety services. So that gives the township more revenue in that aspect.
Is that tax on the businesses there, or the employees as well, or
it would be
anyone living there?
It would be the employees of a business or residents of that JED area. Yes.
It's both. It's income and business income. One more time. Personal income and business income. Yeah.
Okay. And then that would go to help with the facilities of that area in terms of, like you said, roads. Does any of it go to schools?
No.
Okay. So it's just basically roads, public safety, EMS services.
And Ms. Huber, correct me if I'm wrong, there's no statutory requirement of how that money is spent. It's just general fund money.
I think to an extent it's supposed to benefit, I think it's pretty general. Typically, like you're saying, it benefits the JED area, right? It's supposed to contribute to all those things you said.
But it's not required by law to benefit.
I don't believe so.
In that JED area.
All of the terms, I don't believe so. Okay. All of the terms that we're talking about right now, like who gets what percentage and where it goes and who sits on the JED board and all the things get set up in an agreement between the entity, so between the township and whatever its partner municipality is.
Okay, so when the JED is established, all those guidelines will be laid in place in terms of taxes and where the money goes.
That's right.
And presumably it's between the township with your legal counsel and whatever other jurisdiction entity.
That's right.
Now, is the JED only for new development, or JED could potentially be declared anywhere in the township?
Well, it could be for any property, but the property owner has to opt into the JED. It does not, the township cannot force the property owner to join the JED.
Can't be forced. I think there are some ways you can force based on a percentage of who you can get. Like, there are some folks you can drag into, but then there's also an opt out.
The JED was part of the agreement for the overlay. Well, so if you pull down the overlay,
it is.
The land is in a JED.
Those folks would be period. Full stop.
Anybody who's doing traditional zoning, it's up to them.
Correct. Kind of.
But if you're going to pull down the overlay cloud, you're in a JED.
Correct.
As a term of your overlay zoning.
Okay.
Yep.
That's why I wanted to discuss
that. And that's why we added it in here. Yeah. And that's not uncommon. We, with the townships we work with, I mean, again, it's an important fundraising tool. You don't have an income tax ability. This is a way you can sort of take advantage of one of those funding sources. It's new money in a way, right? You don't have to move it from somewhere else where it was being used some other way. So it is a good idea to have it in text like this where you can.
This would be a first for Orange Township.
Right. Okay. Right. And that's not unusual either. I mean, again, townships like Orange, like other townships around the central Ohio area are kind of like,
21st century.
We got to get this going.
So if you do the overlay, you have to opt into the JED.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. That's right.
And you know, what have studies suggested when townships have applied? Well, I guess the fact that they are applying as a whole, they already know the expectation, so it's not like it may. I guess I'm trying to think of, does it prevent any development or prevent any businesses from wanting to?
It's a business consideration, just like anything, is my understanding. Again, you don't have to pick the overlay, you could pick something else. But if you're going to get some of the benefits of the overlay, it's in our opinion, not unfair to ask for, you know, it to be worthwhile for the township.
Okay.
They're watching it on YouTube.
It's bizarre to hear your own voice. Back at you.
Okay, so if we can just step back a second. So overall, high level, just looking at the maps, I think that, you know, obviously doing a commercial office makes sense. The amount of mixed use we had in there originally was probably a little much. And quite frankly, an oversight, I think, on everybody's part in the original when we were going through that process. The process itself, or the timeline, you know, I know you brought this up, but I am a little bit concerned about it. I mean, obviously, 14-day was not enough time for staff to review anything. I think moving that to a 45-day timeline, to me, makes sense, because it's the original submittal. There's a lot of work that needs to go into that upfront, you know, part of the application and through that process. I guess unless this is something the trustees have advised on, I don't see necessarily why we increase them from 30 to 45 days, unless I'm just missing something, because this is now a 90-day minimum process for the applicant. You know, I think even just taking that back down to 30 where it was originally would make sense, because, and I'm not saying that, you know, their efforts in this is less important or anything like that, but I think that, you know, a lot of that legwork is done at the front end of the application. We should have vetted through the majority of any concerns that we can present to the trustees, and I think 30 days is adequate, but I guess I'd like to hear from the rest of the board on that, if they agree with that or not, because I think that, you know, even taking that 15 days out would mean a big difference to applicants, you know, going from what was a 30-day process to now a 90-day process,
just seems like a big jump. And rightfully so, the front end, like I said, the 14 days and everything that we went through at the beginning, I think was way too cramped for everybody. So I don't know.
I think if we do our due diligence at the beginning, I think you're correct. I mean, that's what we're here for, right? So I agree. I think if you come to a compromise, right? Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Well, the overlay was designed to speed up the process for the developers.
Yeah.
So that they came in already understanding we have to meet these criteria so that when it got here, there wasn't that much to talk about and clean up because they were already there.
Yeah.
So I tend to agree.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Yeah, I hate to go backwards, right? Too far backwards. I mean,
well, if you go, I agree with you, if you go too far backwards, what's the incentive for the developers?
Exactly.
I mean, the goal was to streamline this process. Now, initially, it was almost like they streamlined it too much, and the zoning commission didn't even get a chance to
and you guys
even
have a
comment
chance to
on it. Now, at least we get a chance to comment on it, and our comments will go with the trustees along with the staff report and the Delaware County and all that other stuff. But unless I'm mistaken, everybody else, like the staff, Delaware County, and the zoning commission will already reviewed the documentation and made recommendations on it, so that the 45 days from 30 days, I'm not sure what the value add to the trustees is.
So noted, we can take that back.
Unless the trustees are the ones that want the 45
right. Are you?
Yeah, we can check with them.
I would ask, what their value add is for the extra 15 days.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, previously, I mean, it was 2 weeks after you guys saw it was when they heard it. So, I mean, it was scheduled. We had a schedule of this is when you submit, this is when your hearing date is with the trustees, and this is when the work session is. Now, this gives us a little more leeway to schedule it out, to work around schedules and stuff. But are you wanting 45 days cut down to 30 for both, for the first one, or Just to go to the trustees?
Yeah, trustees.
Exactly. It's a compromise where you guys get right. What you need on the front end, but we're saying that
and I mean, and we do have it written that it's within 45 days, so it could be sooner than 45 days,
right.
But
it gives you that 45
right. This is why it gives you that leeway, just in case. But
yeah, I mean, cause I think you all do need the leeway to do your due diligence
right.
To fully vet the application. And make sure that it adheres to the provisions of the overlay. So.
And we had discussed 30 days also for the first step and 45, and we kind of went with 45 just to give a little more leeway. But, I mean, if that's something that you think the developers are going to want, you know, it turned around in 60 days, I think staff-wise we could make that work. I mean, we made it work in a month. Another 30 days.
I just think that. You know, the overlay is there, obviously, to promote growth and development along 23. But if this gets too restrictive, I think now we're almost encouraging just going through regular zoning because they can get it done probably in just the same amount of time at this point, assuming that it's not a complex case and it's something that can go, you know, to the zoning board maybe twice and say that's a month apart or something, then they're moving on to the trustees. It's, you know, what's the point of going through this? Now, I understand there's other incentives and things in there, but I don't want to restrict, I guess, or discourage people from using the overlay. You know, that's really why, the reason for the comment.
Yeah, one of the big benefits that most developers are going to look at is that no referendum period.
Right.
So, I mean, that saves them 30 days at the end.
Correct.
No matter what.
Right.
Saves them 30 days,
right.
Even if they were the same process.
Boy, and the unknown.
And the unknownness. Yeah.
Are you going to succeed or not? Is your application written in stone, written in sand, neither? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We'll get to the public comment in a second. Is there additional comments from the board?
Okay, I sort of have two more. One is the whole three-family residential unit and why they have to be minimum two stories in height. Is there a particular reason for that, especially if the second story doesn't have to be a real story? Why is it two stories and not, say, one and a half? It seems like if you want to have greater density, I understand the purpose for more stories, but then you have the provision of that you don't even have to have occupiable space on the second floor, then you're just having big space. So what's the purpose of the second story?
Some of this is style consistency, in my understanding. Okay. Some of it is there are product types that are becoming more and more common, which are aimed at empty nester folks who don't want a second story.
And then why isn't it a story and a half?
Oh, we can look at that. We can look at that.
As opposed to a full second story. I mean, this is me from an architect background.
We can look at that. In my non-architect background, I'm like, well, if it's a story and a half, does that become a new, like, definitional thing that I have to say? What's a story and a half versus
what's
two?
What's a story and a half story?
We would have to probably define that. Essentially, it's whether sure. It's through dormers or whatever
yeah, it's
else.
Just, it's just the
appearance. It's the appearance of this. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that's a right move, rather than having a two-story requirement.
Yeah, I don't think you should have a two-story requirement if it's not habitable space.
What if it's built next to, like it's connected, it's attached to true two-story structure? I mean,
we still have examples down the street off of Old State where you have two-story townhouses and then the end units are ranch units that are story and a half. Now, whether or not it's great architecture, I won't comment on it, but I think you can make it look good if you want to.
Okay, and is the, just so I can, I'm asking questions from different directions to try to get it where we all want it to be, is the idea that we've, quote unquote, wasted less space by not having just an empty second floor?
Yes.
Or what to you?
For me, that would be, why am I putting the second story on that I can't lease? If I'm a developer, why am I building a second story that I can't have leasable space in, as opposed to just having a larger truss with some dormers in it?
Okay. And I believe this matches up.
Or if I raise it and raise the ceiling height, that's fine, but then I have to go from like 2x4s to 2x6 or 2x8 steps, or double up my steps to span that whole height. So it's going to cost more to put the extra story on that I can't even have leasable space in.
Okay. I believe we have gotten some input that from a potential developer is that accurate? In the overlay, who has sort of said that that's the kind of product they might like to do. But point well taken, I'm making notes, I will look at, I'm just saying, it's not just me being like, one and a half or two, I don't care, right? Like, let's say two.
Yeah, I mean, that's
that would be.
I don't think you should, if they want to do two, that's fine.
Okay.
But I wouldn't make it two stories.
So say at least one and a half is what you're thinking.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Adam, you work for a home building company.
Yeah.
What's your take on this?
You know, there's obviously cost in doing a story and a half as well, but it's a lot less than if you're doing two-story appearance.
Is this just for appearance sake? Is that the whole?
I think it's a consistent appearance, product type that we're seeing, or that there is some degree of interest in, a combination of factors.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with the product type interest. I want to know what the community's interest, though. Are we just doing it just so we can make it appear consistent, or are we just doing it to? What's the drive behind?
I think it becomes like a human scale thing. So you're going to have these developments primarily next to some type of commercial, or office. I'm sorry, commercial, and typically you're not going to see those at
yeah. I think if you change it one place, you should change it all places.
So
we'll just more dwelling unit.
It's not going to be. So from a scale purpose, I think that it's appropriate to maybe, have that extra story and a half, because it's more of a it's a transition, it steps to where, you kind of go from commercial, which, as you well know, even though you walk into a Home Depot or something, it's one story, but the ceiling and everything's very high, and the parapet and all that, so it's a tall structure, and then you have this, smaller thing, you know, smaller development next to it, it's, it just helps with the scale, I think, a transition, and, you know, obviously when you went down to, you know, the Epcon community or something like that, there's just, you know, I'm sure the same.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, a lot of the Epcons are story and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe they have habitable space on the second floor, maybe they don't.
Do you have a height that you use as a story and a half, or how do you determine the story? Because
it's usually just dormers in the roof line or something like that. But I mean, you can pick a height. I mean, standard residential height is 35 feet right now for two stories. So yes, standard for two stories 35. So, you know, maybe if you half that, or maybe 20 or something like that. 2025, but you know, it's whatever the developer wants. I don't
want to
limit them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the developer present what you got, let it see what it looks like, evaluate it against the transition story.
But don't make them do the standard 35 height.
Yeah.
Well, that's typically our max height, so you know,
we hear.
It actually came up with one of our overlays, was the discussion from regional planning was, well, this isn't two stories. Well, it was 25 feet or whatever. So we were told that a story is 10 foot, 12 foot. So if it's double that, then it's two stories. Because we didn't have a definition of what a story was or what a height of the one story was. So there was some ambiguity there that kind of question on how do we interpret that. So right. So that's where, you know, you guys have that architecture background, so from the zoning side, it's, you know, how do we define that, or how do we regulate what's a story, what's a story and a half, what's two stories, what's three stories? Mm-hmm. Is there a minimum height to make it a story and a half?
You have to go in the building to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, the enforcement of it is where a lot of these text changes and different changes that we came up with were.
Well, then maybe, and that was actually one thing I was thinking, in some of your definitions, you like to define all these, like, you know, fence types. You added crossbuck, but you didn't define what a crossbuck was. So it's like, if you define all the other fences, you should define crossbuck. But that maybe you should include images of what it is you're talking about in terms of fence types, and maybe you can include images of what you're talking about in terms of story heights, or visually what a story and a half looks like, or what a two-story looks like, or what a one-story ranch looks like. Does that make sense? And there, you know, like, you have images in here about, you know, what your multifamily building is supposed to look like, or give or take, maybe you can include images of what these things are, what you're looking for. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's part zoning code, part like habitable or something.
Part like kindergarten story?
Yeah,
no.
I mean, I think the images really help.
Right.
And we try to upgrade them from what we had originally and try to make it a little more clear. So,
you know, maybe include that in some of your definitions and include that in what we mean by, you know, a story and a half or two story or whatever. Just a thought. All right.
Appreciate that.
I'm done. You don't need anymore.
All right. Any other comments from the board before we go to public comment? All right. At this time, we'll open it up to public comment. Anybody wishing to speak, please state your name and address.
Hi. Mark Freeman, 478 Unside Lane in Howell. I'm actually an associate member of the board, but I'm not in that capacity tonight. There's several things I wanted to address. One was having to do with the 30 versus 45 days. I think we have two situations. One is your perfect scenario where the developer, having looked at the RCOD requirements, crafts a plan that exactly meets that. And so they want that to sail through. And rightly it should. This never really happens. Okay? What happens is they come up with a plan that's really close, but they need one or two or 75 divergences. And there needs to be some time to go through those and to negotiate those. Now, I'm not saying that 30 days isn't enough time. I don't know. But it's a factor that should be weighed in deciding how much time do we really need to do that. Because sometimes a developer will present something where there's a lot of challenging divergences. And we've seen that in pretty much everything that's come in on the RCOD and including the BJ's submission. So, for what that's worth. One of the things that I think we were all led to believe about the RCOD is it would encourage true mixed-use buildings, not just mixed-use areas. For example, if you've got a strip retail center that has a second story that's residential, kind of like the good old days when the dry cleaner would live above his shop, right? And so that was the kind of thing that I think we were expecting to see happen as a result of that. But in fact, that's not what we got. So I'm wondering if there's anything that could be modified in the RCOD to help influence that, to maybe encourage that, as opposed to just having a commercial building over here and a whole bunch of apartments over there and having it all on the same basic lot. Because that's kind of how we ended up with Cheswick Village, which, full disclosure, is in my backyard, was that there was, we had a mixed-use area declared for the RCOD, and because there was already the Meijer and the Home Depot and whatnot, they were able to put in a fairly substantial number of apartments, which isn't really what anybody envisioned was going to happen as a result of the RCOD. Related comment has to do with definitions. I agree about the cross-block fence, but I think we found that wherever we don't very precisely define something, we don't get what we intended. And so I think we've got to be very careful about that. Both by omitting things, we can cause problems, but also by overly specifying things. I think one of the things we got in the RCOD that was a surprise was the amount of multifamily developments that were being proposed, which obviously took a year or more to develop, that just suddenly hit the plate like as soon as that thing passed. So there was a lot of language put in the RCOD that kind of obfuscated the intent of the people that helped draft it. And so I think the more directly and simply we can put things, the better off we are. And if, like this over-under commercial retail thing that I was talking about, commercial residential rather, if that's something we're trying to encourage, we ought to say so and describe it and maybe have some pictures of it. If that's really what we're trying to accomplish, if that's not anything anybody really wants, then let's not do that. But my understanding with the original pitch for the RCOD was that was something that we could reasonably expect to come out of it, and that was absolutely not anything anybody wanted to build. So there's that. And with regard to sheets, I'm concerned that one of the reasons why we had issues with the sheets application was not that it was a gas station. it was the traffic issues that it presented being so close to that traffic light at Orange and 23. And I want to ensure that whatever changes we're making will prevent similar situations. So I know we've got more information and detail in there about the traffic studies, but let's say we had a similar intersection, and let's say Raising Cane's, to use an example, wanted to, or Chick-fil-A wanted to take a similar sized and situated lot. What do we have in the RCOD that would make that much more difficult for them? Because I don't think we want to have the kind of traffic surface that that's likely to become. So I think that's something that needs to be taken into account.
Okay, I can speak to a couple of those. So I guess what the changes that we made in regards to the traffic study, I think, are the right ones, because it now encourages us to be able to use a third party if something doesn't pass the smell test. It's my understanding that, especially anything involved with 23, that we're not the only ones reviewing the traffic study, that Delaware Regional and possibly ODOT would be reviewing those, depending on where that location is. If it's at ODOT.
Yeah, Sheets is going ahead.
I'm sorry?
And yet Sheets is going ahead.
Well, for other reasons, though, because it was denied, but then, obviously. But what traffic studies, the primary purpose of them is to determine whether there's a safety issue or roadway improvements that are needed. So say that a structure goes in and it's going to generate, 800 trip count or whatever it is, and that then is going to dictate a light to be put there because now it's just a stop sign. That's what the traffic study is going to be able to tell us. Now the developer, these are all hypotheticals, may have some involvement or a cost associated with that traffic light because, it's their development that's generating this need. It's not that a traffic study is going to come up and they're going to say, you can't do this because we just don't have the capacity or something like that. Like, typically what's going to happen is, well, you're generating enough traffic, you're going to have a decel lane now dedicated to your property that, allows someone to properly turn in and not slam on the brakes on 23 to turn into your,
or physical space for that lane.
Right, or maybe an access point gets relocated. It's not going to prohibit, and I don't think that's what you're saying, Sheets from ever being built, and I'm only using them as an example because you did, but it's not going to prohibit a development from going in. It's just going to dictate how the access points are, whether there's a traffic light or it's roadway improvements, essentially. So I think that going forward, obviously we're going to, just like in Sheets, there were some questions about it, and we were able to get a third party to review it. I think that that's going to set a precedent going forward, that if something doesn't seem right and they're showing a low trip count for something that we know, like a Chick-fil-A, for instance, as you mentioned, that there's a lot of people going in ahead of those, that maybe something doesn't pass the smell test. So we hear your concern. I think there was some lessons learned in that application and just this whole process that, we can continue to improve on, and I think that's what we're doing.
My point here is that if we've got lessons learned from that, let's make sure that we're specifically as possible addressing those. Like in the Sheets example, the thing that came to my mind when I first heard about that was northbound traffic on 23 turning left onto Orange and then having to turn the left to get into the Sheets parking lot. But you've got eastbound traffic coming down Orange that wants to make a left turn to go northbound on 23. You've got these crossing streams of traffic, and it's really close to the intersection. So like you were talking about, you know, a D-cell lane or something, I mean, there needed to be like a center turn lane or something there, and there just isn't any room for it.
Yeah.
Plus you get the issues of cars potentially backing up southbound that want to get into the sheets, but somebody's very slow to get out of a parking spot, is it backed up? We could have traffic backed up into the center of that intersection when there's a red light there and cause ourselves all kinds of mischief. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of thing where if we want to avoid that situation, we need something specifically saying that that's a situation we don't want. You know, the entrance way has to be at least X number of feet from a traffic lane.
Well,
that sort of
thing. And there are codes and restrictions on those things that are already in place. What we heavily rely on, and you know, none of us are traffic experts, and nor should the township have to hire one on and incur that cost. I think that what the solution is Delaware Regional is, when they review these, they give us comments almost every time on traffic studies. So we do rely on that heavily to you know, direct us on, you know, the information that's provided. Now, I think all of us have some experience reviewing these, and whether that's through a profession or just from being on board a certain amount of time, that we're able to identify certain things, but we're not the experts in, by any means. So I think that, you know, what we, to answer your question, I think what, you know, obviously needs to happen is we communicate these things to Delaware, which we have, and I think continue to do that and say, look, we're concerned that, you know, this particular property might you know, cause some backups or stuff like that. And you know, based on this traffic study, you know, do you foresee that happening, or is there a better way to do this? Because I would say that for us to try to direct that, it's probably not appropriate because we just don't have the professional experience.
And just to reassure you, District 6 with ODOT has probably instructed us in the state on traffic. So we do have a district up here that is probably the strictest by far in the state of Ohio. So,
but yeah, I mean, I would say we should definitely share the same concern as you. We're not disagreeing with you by any means. If I can, moving on to the mixed-use multi-story concept that you mentioned, I think it would be hard for us to drive, you know, something like that specifically to where, you know, we're saying that you have to have a first story retail and a second story residential or anything like that. Me personally, I'm not speaking for the entire board here, I completely agree with you that I think that, you know, this, you know, we're gonna have a store here and then over here is gonna be some, you know, a multifamily and we're considering this a mixed use, you know, property. I think that they need to be more integral. And I think there's ways that we can do that. You know, I'm hopeful that, you know, with everything going on in Evans Farms, exactly what you're saying is going on there, where there is first floor retail and residential above. I think that, you know, once people catch on to that and see that, it's going to encourage that type of developments here. And I would say that we can take a look at that and certainly try to put something in the code. But I think being prescriptive to the point of saying, like, we need to do this, I don't know if that's necessarily the right path, but I hear what you're saying, and I completely agree with you on it, because I feel that, you know, we shouldn't just take a development and then just throw a bunch of, you know, and not have them connected in any way. Like, that's where I struggle with, and maybe the board agrees, maybe they don't, but I sort of happen to agree with you on that one. And then the last comment, or I guess going back, was the first comment you have in regards to the timeline. I just want to understand what you're trying to say is, you know, we went from 14 days on the staff review to 45, which is a big jump.
Yeah.
You know, my comment, or at least probably what you heard, was primarily in respects to, I think that the front end is going to be more strenuous in the point, and from the perspective of, you know, we're getting all the information in, we're gathering it, we're you know, coming up with, you know, what the divergences are and figuring all that stuff out. By the time it gets to the trustees, you know, it should be to a point where
look, we're pointing out the highlights, we're giving you the important things that we think you need to pay attention to, we're giving you our concerns, and then, you know, what maybe we like about this particular overlay, you know, property or you know, development that's going on. And at that point, the only reason why I felt that it, to reduce that back down to 30, what we had before at the trustee level, was only because, you know, all of that stuff would have been vetted through at the beginning. Hopefully by the time it gets to them, they still have the same amount of time they had before, which I think is enough, you know, appropriate time. I'm not trying to cut it down to, you know, where developers can just come in and ramp stuff through this township and we never get to really.
Yeah, the original 14 days was.
It was aggressive.
It was rough.
Yeah, it was aggressive. And I think we made the right changes there. So hopefully that answers your questions. And if anybody else has comments, feel free to respond. I don't know, I don't mean to speak for everybody.
I agree with the whole mixed use idea. The issue being is, I mean, that's what I do for a living. I do mixed use, and it's mostly in the Short North or other areas of Columbus where real estate is at a premium, and it makes sense to do something like that. I'm not sure we're quite there yet on 23. It would be nice if we were, but we do, I agree with Adam, to do something that would integrate more of the multifamily with the business or commercial use. So that you can walk to an office, or you can walk to a grocery store or a restaurant or something like that. Now, how to go about doing that, besides like maybe showing more examples, I'm not sure, because I don't want to define something so strictly that it's going to actually discourage innovation and thoughts.
Exactly right. I don't think we ought to be doing anything to say you have to do it this way, but I think we can do something to sort of use the code to advertise that as an attractive option for them to just, you know, have a seed plan. Like the Kroger shopping area on 23. If that were to be developed today new, you could have the Kroger there, but that whole strip of restaurants and retail there, there could be two stories of residential above that, and it could look really nice, and I think people would enjoy being in that space, living there. And it would give us some relatively low-priced housing, because most of the cost of those buildings would be in the first floors. Adding a couple of stories of residential would have tremendous cost, and we'd be able to see maybe some places where people that actually work at the Kroger would have a place to live in the township.
Yeah.
You know, because that's definitely an issue here. I mean, we don't want to see, you know, 15-story apartment buildings in Orange Township. But the people that work there have to have a place to live.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you on that, and certainly, you know, and I like what you use the word innovation. I don't know how we spell that out to encourage that. Certainly, as I try to encourage, going back to grabbing back some of this mixed-use story here, of suggesting or of encouraging what we're looking for is great innovation in the use of that space. And I think you'd be upfront with developers and say it's not innovative enough that clearly speaks to a true mixed use, then it's not gonna make it. It's not gonna get through the board. So I think, and you're absolutely right, people who work at Kroger's ought to be able to afford to live right there.
Well, and if we look at the most recent thing that's gone through is the BJ's mixed use development, there really isn't any integration. Now, I know they didn't come in under the RCOD, but if they had, and they might well have if it was in place, what would be said about that? You know, it's not really integrated in any way. It's again putting apartments over here, and in that case, you know, a big commercial building over here. And somehow, even though we keep talking about how we don't want gas stations on 23, and we're putting that in the RCOD, we recommended for approval the BJ's with a gas station on 23 and gave divergences for the signage. So I'm confused.
Well, this just came in as far as prohibited gas stations. That was one of my questions. Is this going to work now, since it's now prohibited? It was already approved. But yes, you're right. That would not have been approved. BJ's came in today. If this was already approved, it would have qualified.
It wouldn't have qualified in the previous text either. Right. There was no gas stations, fueling stations were allowed in the mixed use districts. So all that mixed use district area that would not have been allowed.
But it came under traditional.
Right. Yeah. Wouldn't have qualified for the overlay, but it can still. Yeah.
It can still do traditional.
Exactly.
And you are correct, there were a lot of.
So, yeah, I mean, Mark, I appreciate the feedback. I think that we'll definitely take that into consideration. I think that what you said that I've actually brought up before and I agree with is the best way to, the best zoning code I've ever seen in other municipalities generally has some type of imagery or something in there. And I think if we find some things that we all, you know, really, you know, like and think that the township, that it would be appropriate here, that we maybe include those as far as, you know, within the text. So maybe that would help some of the development, you know.
I think the original RCOD was really great in that regard in terms of the landscaping you know, what the views could look like or should look like. You know, I think that's really helpful. And it makes all more understandable as to what the intent is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or appreciate the comments. So let's see if there's any other public comment here. Is there anybody else that wishes to speak tonight?
My name is Spencer Hagel, 330 South Parkway Drive, Delaware, Ohio, 43015. I think that we perceive things more vividly in the ways that they directly affect us. To give you a perspective, I live in a neighborhood that's bordered by 23 and West Orange. It's also kind of bordered by North Orange. The old overlay kind of almost swallowed the subdivision. I know people have made arguments, you know, if there's an open lot, you can probably expect something will go in there. What you don't expect is potentially every house that borders your neighborhood to convert commercial as part of a broad overlay. And it scared me a little bit. I wondered if there was a way you could might make this point a little moot, and I didn't catch it, my eyes aren't that great from the back, but I wondered if you could put that. Yeah, because I seem to notice a big change in that area, and that kind of rendered residence a little
moot. Then we took out the residential area.
Is it this one here?
Segment two.
So you might be able to see this one a little better over here, a little closer to that.
Okay. If you want to look at
that would be
awesome. That's better.
Yeah,
that's
the west side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I should be better with that.
It's down at the bottom of it.
Okay.
So,
okay. So I guess my concern is there's a lot of lots specifically there that aren't bordered on 23 that butt up into our subdivision. Those aren't vacant lots, those are houses. And what you don't expect is when you get a house that your neighbors or somebody in your backyard is going to be part of a broader overlay that just makes that conversion automatic. Everybody's entitled to a zoning area if you wish to change it. But I have a concern there that those are houses. They're occupied, they are not vacant lots. And if you do that as a part of an overlay, then what's stopping that from keeping on moving?
So Spencer, the map, and just for clarification purposes, the map on the left is the old map that we had under the previous overlay. That continued much further into the west side of Orange Road. If you look on the right there, and I know there's a little legend there, but you can see that now stops at the properties at 23. So we have reduced that footprint going down Orange Road.
Well, I understand. I guess my question is There's more lots that don't border 23 that are existing occupied residences. Out of curiosity, why would those be part of an overlay when they don't border 23 and are occupied?
Yeah, and it's not that, you know, there's any be anything like, you know, like an eminent domain or anything like that. They're not. What this is stating is just, you know, generally, regardless of what, you know, the use is today, you know, how we foresee the future. Now, this isn't like a 5-year plan or something that we intend that, you know, whoever's left in this, it's gone. You know, those residences could remain there another 100 years. I mean, it's not, this isn't dictating, you know, what that use is. So say this passes, that doesn't mean that people are going to have to start moving out or anything like that. If that makes sense.
I guess my question is...
And you're saying around the residences, right?
Yeah,
because
I understand if they border 23, I mean, it's borders 23, but there's a lot of these that are existing homes that don't border. So these could potentially turn into, you know, something that, you know, there wouldn't be a discussion about it. It's automatic, it's part of a broad overlay. So the discussion, you know, sort of ended.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is you have to sort of figure out, you know, like how we use the lot and continue that evenly. So, like, you know, if you just look at some of the lots, you know, there might be one lot and then there's three across. If you have one lot that borders 23 that's going to be commercial, the lot across the street might not really work to stay a house. Maybe that lot should also be commercial. Now, it wouldn't necessarily be on its own. It might have to be combined with neighboring lots. But it's one of those things is where you sort of have to figure out where to put the dividing line in terms of the lots that face 23. I understand what you're saying is that obviously 23 should be the commercial corridor. The residentials should be behind it. But it's not like there's a clear-cut line that says everything on one side is commercial and everything on the other side is residential. We sort of have to negotiate how to best create a, I don't want to say a dividing line, but how to figure out what lots. And so, and I agree in the past, there was a lot on Orange Road that was a little too far removed from 23, and we shortened that back.
No, don't get me wrong, it is greatly improved.
Okay.
By all means, because we went halfway down, basically, Orange Road almost half it out of 315.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a little more concise now. Now, is it perfect? No. I mean, we do have the advantage of, you know, the sort of the access road between the residential and 23 by where we have, you know, the township park and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a little access road that leads into our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And not here or there, but there's a collision center going in there. If you Google that address, it takes you through our neighborhood to get there.
Okay.
And our neighborhood, I've probably never driven back there because the nice thing is the only reason to be back there is you live there. But the roads aren't, if you're not used to them and two cars cross, they put divots in our yard because the roads aren't wide. You know, we have drainage ditches. At one point, they did construction on Orange Road after a temporary route through the road. And somebody had to put up markers because they were driving 3 or 4 feet into our yards and just tearing it up. So I just wanted to think about that the neighborhood is not scaled.
Well, that's actually a very good point when it comes to construction traffic and how construction traffic should be maintained, but that's not really the purview.
I just want to make sure that if we're talking about existing residences, that we're thinking about that, because I think everyone understands, you know, if you want to live in the middle of nowhere, move to the middle of nowhere, they go 100 miles farther, and it'll still catch up to you. But I don't think we ever considered, you know, houses being part of something broad like this that would just be allowed to be conferred without something very specific talking about its use. So I hope, like I said, not that I can, you know, make any changes, but I hope that we consider this kind of thing, because there's something that when you buy a house and you think about, you know, how will this take a month. We thought about it before North Orange, we were there in 1999, before North Orange was there. We knew that something could go there. You know, it's a risk when you buy a house in that area. But we never considered houses being something broad that could be just converted as part of it, and the dangers and the risks and the downsides that come along with it. So I just wanted to put that out there to make sure we consider that.
Yeah, and just to speak on that site, so Caliber Collision actually is taking up two parcels. One has a house on it they're going to demolish. Then the one next to 23 is vacant. There's currently maybe two parcels that have, maybe three parcels that have houses on it that are in this overlay map. There's one on the edge of where Parkway dead ends and then loops around, has a house. And then there's the two here. So one's getting demolished. So they won't be here anymore as part of Caliber Collision as these two. This one has a house. There's two vacant properties north of that. There's actually four vacant properties north of that. There's that little road that shown on the map that stubs down. On the Delaware County thoroughfare plan, they plan on that road coming down all the way down the Parkway. So they have that coming as a through road eventually. So you'll have the one lot that has a house, and then there's three just south of, I believe it's Parkway that comes out to 23.
I think it's west. Yeah, this gets weird.
Yeah, it's, yeah. So
yeah, it's very, very
right. So those three parcels to the south, they have actually tried to sell them and advertise them as commercial. They're not commercial currently, but they've had a lot of interest that people have. They're trying to sell it as commercial, so that's part of the reason why. It's with the overlay. It's surrounded to the east is commercial, which is that pickups plus, and then there's that vacant lot. So I mean, there's probably four lots there that are currently might have a residence on it.
Understood. And like, yeah. Like I said, I think the change addresses right. a lot yeah. of the concern because going so far down, I felt like we were getting swallowed.
Yeah, and with that road extension that the county has on their plans for the future, I think that's part of the reason why that got included to be.
Yeah, and like so. I said, I think it's not really part of this, but the real concern about the cut through traffic,
mm-hmm.
because you know if there is a cut through,
right.
it's going to get used. I can't think of any place that doesn't, you know, the cut through and people don't.
Right.
Don't use it. Everybody, people are like water. They follow the path to lose resources. So I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comments? All right. Anything further from the board?
I have a concern that we're setting up a standard for the RCOD. That's different than what we have for the regular zone, which I know we're about to review and enhance. But it seems like people will be able to, and maybe it's just my own incorrect impression, people will be able to choose whether they want to apply under the RCOD or not for the same lot. So they can choose whether, for example, we're prohibiting auto-related services as part of the RCOD, which means that if you have an auto-related service, you can just say, I don't want this considered as part of the RCOD. I'll go through the regular process, and we'll be able to get it anyway, potentially. Even though we specified in the RCOD, that's the thing we didn't want. And I'm wondering if there's some way we can get more consistency so that people don't get to choose the rules under which they get to play.
So that we are going undergoing a zoning text rewrite, which mm-hmm. I know you're aware of, and I think that those are going to be critical conversations. That obviously, you know, maybe there needs to be more of an alignment between the two, or you know, whether it's, you know, maybe less restrictive or however those conversations go. I know it's going to be part of those discussions, but. You know, unfortunately, these two things are working at different paces right now.
I was about to say, year or two yeah. where there's going to be this ambiguous situation.
Right, and that's where I think we can do what we can in the RCOD or the overlay, because you know that's what's in front of us, and that's what you know we're working on to get put back in place and move forward from that, and then you know obviously much bigger picture. You know, is doing the text rewrite. We can't, there's no way to make that process go any faster.
unfortunately. So, well, I mean,
we want to get it right.
Yeah, no, right, yes.
Yeah.
So, noted, yeah.
With your permission, I'd also add that it's a little bit the point of having a couple different options. Now, should things in a general sense be consistent? Absolutely. That being said, the point of the RCOD is like it's carrot and a stick, right? So you're going to get someone who avails themselves of the overlay, pulls it down, applies it to their property. We're just saying you get the fast track, my words, not anyone else's right. words, if A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. If you don't want the fast track and you want the regular track, great, you still have the regular track, but we're going to have that extra level of oversight. It's going to follow the usual process. It's going to go through both steps, the usual timeline. So I don't see it as a picking the rules so much as we're going to give a couple options. I mean, it is. It's a couple options, but there's, like I said, carrots and sticks that go along with each that we can incentivize using this, and we're recognizing that it'll have a faster, more streamlined, slightly less, I wouldn't say less oversight, but we've decided in advance some of the things we want or don't want. We've set the expectations that way. So for what that's worth.
I'm just thinking, like, hypothetically, if I want to open a Midas muffler franchise or a Firestone or whatever right on 23, well, if that's going to be prohibited by the RCOD, I can just say, okay, well, I'm not applying under the RCOD. Yep. So I want to go through the regular rules, but there's nothing in the regular zoning that says I can't open that type of business there. So, yeah, I'll go through, I'll spend the 6 months, I'll do whatever I've got to do, and then I get what I want.
Maybe.
Except that that's clearly something we're saying we don't want. So
let me reason sheets we may not work this. The trustees don't like it. The trustees would not approve anything other related coming across. Yeah. Even if we approved it. They're gonna shut it down. That's where the prohibited for the other things really came from. That was by the moratorium. It was because of the sheets and because of other related things. So okay. I think you have no
that's,
fear.
That's great.
I think we might not have liked it, but
I think you have no,
it met the criteria.
It met the criteria.
And right now, somebody came in, I already know that. I already know that. Okay, great, you can do this. But your chances of getting approved are, in my opinion, based on history, may be slim. Whatever happens here, whatever time you've wasted, spent.
So I got two other things that I'm hoping are really fast, so I apologize for the time I'm taking. One is there's been a lot of chatter in Facebook groups and Nextdoor and so forth. People don't really understand what the JEDs are and what they mean. And it would be helpful if there could be a clear statement about whether or not homeowners will see property taxes or other tax increases as a result of them somehow being incorporated into a JED. Or are we saying that JEDs will never include a residential property? I mean, it just seems unclear to people.
We don't put JEDs on exclusively residential property. Mixed use? Sure.
Right.
Within some parameters, but exclusively a single family subdivision that all it is houses doesn't get a JED.
Even if they build a collision place in the lot next door.
Well, I mean, the JED would be on the collision place, not the one we've talked about because it's different,
right.
but because it's commercial. It's
an
income tax associated with commercial, more or less, some version of commercial, except mixed use, but at least partly commercial. Apartments are likely commercial, depending on how that gets categorized. But truly, a single, like my single family subdivision is not, I mean, that's not the kind of development that gets
the JED. So the JED's actually a benefit to people that live in a single family.
It can be. It's a way of diversifying the tax base.
Right,
right,
because we're going to be paying for the traffic lights and road expansions and whatever else they need without having to go and pull.
Yeah, it takes away from the income tax. Not the income tax, but the property tax.
Right,
it's an offset of the property tax.
Okay.
Well,
I was just going to say, it's not really the purview of the zoning commission. That's something that the trustees and staff can bring that up with them whenever they have a staff meeting or whatever, but that's not really the zoning commission. That's more of a trustee economic development, marketing type thing.
Right, it's been added here as, again, in the spirit of carrots and sticks.
Sure.
But if and when the trustees wanted to pursue a JED, there would be more action. This by itself does not create a JED. There would be a JED agreement. There would be heavy conversations with the municipalities that you're going to use there.
I just know there's a lot of people that are concerned.
Yes, there would be a lot more.
They just don't understand what it means.
Sure. There would be a lot more conversation, meeting, information about it if and when that proceeds.
Maybe they'll need to find a newsletter or something like that so that folks can get
information. Yes. My final point, I promise. One thing I would like to see in the new zoning code and in the revised RCOD is some specification as to buffers when a non-residential property is abutting an existing residential property. For example, let's just take the sheets because it's convenient. There's a residential property on Orange Road directly to the west of the Sheets property. And they're going to put like a little line of trees and shrubs there, but they're opening a car wash right on the other side of it. And the noise from those blowers is going to go right through the little trees that they want to put in there. Personally, I just feel bad for whoever has a house there or wants to build a house there. I don't even know if that's an occupied lot or not. But just in general, I think when we're putting in anything other than single-family residential, that's abutting existing residential, we should be providing some rules as to what a minimum buffer might be in terms of depth, height, density, something.
I thought we already have the zoning code.
We have it in here too.
It's for commercial use from a residence.
Yeah, mounting. I think it's mounting and landscaping. But
there's both. There's landscaping, and then there's this chart on page 24 about tract boundary setback. Uh-huh. So there's distances between when abutting a designated farm or single family residential, if it's commercial, mm-hmm. 100 feet, if it's these, 50, if it's these, 50. And there's also a landscape requirement for the edge.
Okay. So my property is diagonally behind the Myers loading dock. There is a very large mound between them and me, which does nothing. Acoustically, it does nothing. And I've heard people testify here in previous meetings about how sound won't go up and down a hill. That's not possible. But it does. Every time somebody slams a truck door, I hear it in my bedroom. It's not terrible. It's livable. I'm not going to move. But just having that mound there doesn't solve the problem. People who were talking about, I forget the name of the development that's going in, the multifamily, where there was an abutting set of condominiums and other residential around there, and some woman was saying that she had concerns in the meeting about that sort of buffering, and they're like, oh well, yeah, the existing tree line, we're gonna leave that alone. We're not gonna touch that. But you don't know how much that existing tree line is really gonna do for her. I mean, in terms of the acoustics. So it, having a visual barrier there is great, but like what Sheets is going to put in, I'm not even sure it's going to be a good visual barrier. It certainly isn't going to be a good acoustic barrier. It's just something we've got to consider. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
I appreciate it.
All right. Robin, is there, do we have anything scheduled?
The 26th.
26.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We have one application.
Okay.
It's a small one.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if we want to do it. What would be the next one?
So 26 would be this next one. That would be the one. That would be the one that we would prefer.
Okay. Anybody having any issues with the 26th?
Of this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we have one hearing that evening. We have one case that'll be on that evening, and then this one to continue discussion on this.
How long the discussion lasts.
It should be a short one. The other one should be a short discussion.
Well, now you jinxed it.
If it's a long one, it's your guys' fault.
I think you probably will. Do you think that gives everybody enough time? Any concerns with that? Okay. So can I get a motion to continue the RCOD amendments hearing on April 26th?
At 6:30 p.m. here?
At 6:30 p.m. Yeah, that's Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Tuesday the 26th, 6:30 p.m.
At Township Hall.
At Township Hall.
Second.
The whole one.
All right. Can you remind me of how to say your last name?
Pahovich.
Pahovich. Thank you. Mr. Pahovich.
Yes.
Mr. McNeil.
Yes.
Ms. Travels.
Yes.
Mr. Pierce.
Yeah.
Mr. Beer.
Yes. Okay, now on to meeting minutes. First ones we have up here are the lingering August 28th, 2021. Minutes, which I think we had in a previous meeting, but we didn't get the minutes in time for us. So does anybody have any comments to those? No comments? All right. I'm going to make a motion to approve the August 28th, 2021 Evans Farms zoning application ZON 21-05 and ZON 21-06 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Pons?
Yes.
Mr. McNulty?
Yes.
Mr. Bells?
Yes.
Mr. Pierce?
Yes.
Mr. Beer?
Yes. All right. The next ones here are the January 25th, 2022 organizational meeting that we had. And what was ZON-21-07?
That was Hidden Reviews Crossing.
Hidden Reviews, yes, that's what it was. Any comments?
I have none, but I was absent.
No problem.
Okay. I need a motion to approve the January 25th, 2022 organizational and Hidden Ravines zoning application ZON-21-07 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Sir.
Mr. Mahomes?
Yes.
Mr. McNeil?
Yes.
Mr. Bellis?
Abstain.
Mr. Pierce?
Yeah.
Mr. Beer?
Yes. Next are the February 8th, 2022 Hidden Ravines meeting minutes. Any comments?
I was going to comment that technically now they're no longer minutes, they're a journal of actions.
Ooh, that's, yeah.
And I have nothing. I'm okay to approve this one, but I have a few comments for the next one and the Journal of Actions.
You call this Journal of Actions?
Or there's must be a maybe just call it a journal.
Okay.
As opposed to
the
desk.
Does that matter? Does it matter? Oh, okay.
Because the format has changed.
Yeah. Okay. That's Robert's rules to a degree that I, to a PhD level degree that I don't know. So whatever your practice is, whatever is consistent with your practice.
All major rules, actually. For now.
Okay. / minutes. There. See, there
kind
we go.
I think what the trustees do.
Because
it states that the official minutes are the recording.
Line numbers and verbatim points made.
Okay. Now you get a recommendation to approve the February 8th, 2022 Hidden Ravines zoning application ZON-21-07 Journal of Action /meeting minutes.
So moved.
Mr. Popovich?
Yes.
Mr. McCall?
Yes.
Mr. Bellis?
Yes.
Mr. Pierce?
Yeah.
Mr. Beard?
Yes. Alrighty, and on to the last ones here. March 8th, 2022, Hidden Ravines meeting minutes, Journal of Actions.
And actually, I have two issues with the Journal of Actions. There were two issues I had with the applicants and their statements. One was regarding the discussion of the light pole height and the divergence they requested. They stated that the light pole height they needed was due to safety, and they outlined it in an email. I disagreed. That was never noted in the Journal of Actions, that I disagreed with them. As an architect, if I have a problem with my photometrics, I need to add more poles, or I need to change the head on said poles, not make them higher. That's no reason for a divergence. So I want to go on the record stating that I disagreed, and that was not in the, that was not in the Journal of Actions. Well, the second point that
are
I
you
was,
are you asking that the minutes be revised?
I ask that the Journal of Actions be revised with a statement similar to what I just said.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but that is a personal point of mine. The other point I had in that meeting was regarding the building elevations and the materials that were going to be used on said building. We asked for more architectural features. They provided some pilasters, but they did not improve the materials. We referred to the example in New Albany where it was going to be faced in brick. I suggested it could be faced in a material such as spec brick or something equivalent, but to make it look less like a warehouse, and that the applicant did not accept that. So they did not, as far as I was concerned, enhance the architectural features of the building to my satisfaction. So I wanted that to be a point as well, because I was the one person on the commission that rejected the application. I wanted to be on record why I did so. Besides that, I'm good. Sorry.
No. Any other comments? Okay. Can I get a recommendation for approval of the March 8th, 2022 Hidden Ravines zoning application ZON-21-07 meeting minutes / Journal of Actions as amended?
So moved.
Second. Mr. Mahovich?
Yes.
Mr. McNulty?
Yes.
Mr. Bellis?
Yes.
Mr. Pierce?
Yes.
Mr. Beard?
Yes. Okay. Any other items?
There are no other agenda.
All right.